We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider, presented by Crumley Roberts. Visit CrumleyRoberts.com today to find out how they can stand up for you.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you and the entire month of May. The show is presented by Crumley Roberts. You can visit CrumleyRoberts.com. Find out how they can stand up for you. And Adam, I think you, sir, need to stand up and salute. You need to salute this episode of the Carolina Insider because this is a big-time episode.
If you can't enjoy this episode of the Carolina Insider, there's not much we can do for you right. Because it's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and per usual, nothing to do with Adam and me.
Right.
It's the fact
that's the best episodes.
I mean, we have two big time guests. Number one, fresh off the national championship winning goal in the third consecutive national title for Carolina field hockey. Adam, I think it's fair to say one of our BFFs and quite honestly, the best field hockey player in the United States, Aaron Mattson, in studio with us. We're going to talk to Aaron about the championship. We're going to talk to her about smack talking. We're going to talk to her about hugging her dad. All kinds of good stuff.
I thought Aaron handled it extremely well when she ran into the stands to hug us and couldn't find us. And instead had to settle for her dad.
I will settle for hugging my parents.
I thought you couldn't even see the disappointment on her face, but you can hear her tell us about that moment shortly.
By the way, Aaron's mom, Jill, she got a secondary hug, but it didn't get as much love. What we found out is Jill has to come from a different part of the stadium because, as you'll hear in the interview, Aaron's parents are very savvy. And they have lucky places to sit. And, I mean, would they rather sit together? Of course they would. But look, the die is cast. They know where they have to sit.
Anyone who has kids who play sports understands that idea that, number one, it might be better for your marriage if you sat in different areas. And number two, once you find something that works,
yeah, it works.
You go with that because you are playing an important role in the outcome of these games based on where you sit.
Obviously.
And what you do during the games. Everyone understands this. Yeah.
So we're going to talk to Aaron Mattson and can't wait. Then, Adam, an interview that we teased on Twitter on Friday. And I believe this. This is one of the most honest interviews that we've ever done, and it is with Joseph Forte, all-time offensive player for the Tar Heels. But Joseph Forte's been a little bit of an enigma. Flamed out very quickly in the NBA. Left Carolina kind of on rocky terms, I feel like. You just haven't heard from Joseph Forte in like 10 years. And it's a really open, honest interview. Good stuff, both basketball talk and non-basketball talk. I think it will be important when you hear this interview to understand that there are some delicate things that have happened in Joseph Forte's life that he kind of talks about, and we don't really follow up on it because we knew that there were some delicate things going on and wanted him to kind of go at his own speed, and then hopefully we're going to have a chance to talk to him again in the near future.
It felt like there was going to be a time to talk more in depth about some of that stuff, and the time was not as he's reintroducing himself to the Carolina world.
Absolutely.
So hopefully part two of that conversation will be down the road, maybe even right here in Pod World headquarters.
Adam, Aaron Mattson, hours after the national championship, and the first interview with Joseph Forte in like a decade.
Aaron Mattson still wearing the national championship t-shirt.
Yeah.
Jones, she had washed it.
Yeah, don't worry.
She had washed it.
Threw it in the washer this morning so she could still be flexing on all of us with her championship shirt, but she didn't want it to stink.
It's a little different than those of us who go and like buy the national championship shirt at Belk's or Chapel Hill Sportswear or something, and versus like they handed it to you on the field after you scored the championship winning goal.
Yeah. So all of that coming up, plus we have a story time as well. And it is all brought to you here on the pod by LS Tractor. Don't let those outside chores or projects cause you to miss any Tar Heel game action. I mean, think how disappointed you would be if you had missed Aaron Mattson's national championship winning goal because you were out mowing the grass. That would be a mistake.
And the neighbors would be mad because you had been mowing the grass at like 9 at night.
Yeah. And from watching Point Break, we know that sometimes those lawnmowers are really loud. That'll make more sense later. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them. Normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. LSTractorUSA.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? So, Adam, I don't think there's a lot of major football basketball news for Carolina right now. Only thing I can really think of is Coach Williams has gone. I think Hubert Davis was with him at least once, maybe a couple of times, going to see some former players now that he's able to, or fans are able to be back in the stadiums a little more regularly. I know he went to Charlotte when the Bulls were there to play the Hornets to see Coby White. I think he saw Cole Anthony recently as well somewhere. So good to see that tradition is still alive.
I think Coach Williams and Eric Hoots went to the Coby White game in Charlotte, and I think Orlando was in town the next night.
Gotcha.
And Coach Williams and Coach Davis both at that one. And Cole Anthony, we know how Coby White feels about everything Tar Heel. We've had him on the pod several times. But also good to see Cole Anthony talk about how meaningful it was to him to see the Carolina folks come out to see him play. And he's mentioned on Instagram several times where we get all our news that he's planning to be back in town this summer. So hopefully that occurs.
Adam, I think the much larger Carolina news just continues to be the postseason play of all these teams that we've been keeping an eye on in the spring. And of course, field hockey winning the national championship, which we're going to talk about. Women's soccer has advanced to the College Cup. That's the Final Four of soccer. The men, you will know by the time you hear this, they play Wake Forest on Monday evening for the right to go to the College Cup. So there's the chance that Carolina could have the men and women in the College Cup. We'll have at least the women there. Both the tennis programs won their first and second round matches, so they have each advanced to the round of 16 of their respective tournaments. And both lacrosses got the number one overall seed in their tournaments. We knew the women would. We knew the men were in the mix to get the number one overall seed, which they did. I know we talk about it all the time. It's just, it's incredible to see the continued success and sustained success of these programs.
It's harder to win a national championship than Carolina is making it look right now. I think it's really good that field hockey got one because in the back of your mind, you had this worry that what if Carolina has all these really good teams and you don't get any national titles? Once you get one, anything else is great. Got to get one. Field hockey got the one, and now we'll see what all these other teams can do. What an advertisement for Carolina on Sunday night. You finish watching field hockey win the national title. Now let's go to the lacrosse selection show. Carolina's number one in both of those two.
Yeah.
Basically, Carolina runs everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a remarkable night for sure for Carolina athletics on Sunday night, capped by, or the cornerstone being that national championship. Adam, I watched the final three quarters. I missed the first quarter. I watched the final three quarters of the field hockey match. It's a fast-paced game. I'm not going to claim I understand all the rules of field hockey, but this was also, I mean, it's not like Carolina blew Michigan out. This was a hard-fought game, dramatic game. Carolina led 3-1. Michigan tied it up at 3. And then my astute field hockey knowledge tells me, I mean, I thought Michigan was the aggressor there for a while, but then in the overtime period where Carolina eventually scored, I thought Carolina really dominated the play in the extra period, and they eventually get the shot and the goal.
There was a moment where I thought we were headed for blowout time.
Yeah.
When Carolina goes up 3-1, you could tell Michigan was staggered a little, and maybe Carolina felt that way too. Because Michigan, clearly a good team, able to get back into it. But you know what? They ran their mouth just a little too much.
Yeah.
Aaron Mattson will tell us some more about that.
Yeah, that's always a mistake.
Don't poke the bear.
Yeah, why would you intentionally fire up Aaron Mattson?
Did you not see The Last Dance? Don't you? Aaron Mattson was basically sitting there looking at her iPad, doing the Michael Jordan big laugh, going, and I took that personally. And then she went out, and as she said, put it on the backboard.
Yeah. Well, there's no sense in us talking about it. Let's let her talk about it. We're going to get to our interview with Aaron Mattson here in just a second. And a reminder that the pod is brought to you by the Playing It Forward campaign. It is Carolina's scholarship drive to honor Roy and Wanda Williams. You can say thank you to Coach and Wanda for all of their support by you supporting some scholarships and continuing their legacy on campus. You can learn more at playingitforward.unc.edu. Okay, we're going to go to the Aaron Mattson interview, talk to Aaron. We'll transition straight from that to our Joseph Forte interview. Come out of the Forte interview, Adam and I'll have some other stuff on the backside of the show. All coming up on the Carolina Insider.
Look, I'm not going to lie. I don't know all the details of the intricate field hockey rules. But here's what I do know. On Sunday night, when I was watching the national championship game with my family, I look like a genius because the game's in overtime. Next goal wins. Sitting on the couch.
Yep.
Get the ball to Aaron.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
Get the ball to Aaron. Boom.
Boom.
Couple seconds later, national title. I look like I know what I'm doing.
Was Aaron fortunate that I wasn't in goal for Michigan at that moment?
There you go.
Well, and I actually said after I think Aaron's second goal, I said, ooh, I'm glad Jones wasn't in there for that one because he would have gotten hurt. That was a rocket.
The last one had some heat, too. So, obviously, Aaron Mattson is joining us just hours after winning a third consecutive national championship with the Tar Heels. Aaron, take us through just what's been going on. I have to imagine this last, 24 hours or so have been crazy.
Yeah, I mean, lots of celebration. You guys know how it goes. The team deserves it. We deserve it. We worked really hard. Been through a lot. Every team has, and we came out on top, luckily, and we worked together, and it was just a hard-fought battle the whole way, not only just the game, since the fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were just able to stick together, have each other's backs, and it was fun.
So if someone has not been following the whole season,
mm-hmm.
Take us through how it worked this year and what the challenges were with the weird schedule that you guys had.
Yeah, definitely. So the ACC was lucky enough to play in the fall. We had, I guess, after everything got situated, you know, everyone figured everything out. There were 20 games you could play regular season. And the ACC, since we played in the fall, we played 10 in the fall, and then we had 10 left over in the spring. So Big Ten, every other conference, they had 20 games to play in the spring, which was really interesting just because of the whole schedule situation and everything. But so, yeah, we played all fall. It was a normal fall, everything. ACC championship at the end of the fall, lucky enough to win that, come away with that trophy. And then there was season number two in the spring, which is fun and interesting and a lot different than everything we've been used to. But We had 10 more games to prove that we were number one, and we were able to do that and come out with another trophy.
I really appreciate you saying, oh, you guys know how that goes. In reality, no, we do not know what it is like to be one of the very best in the world at what we do. But that is a very nice thought. Okay, so the last play, Sunday night, you had kind of two consecutive penalty corners, one that did not go in and then the next one. What did you learn from the first one that helped you on the second one?
Yeah, so we call one of the corners salsa when I just kind of, you know, go. And Rob coined that term. He's like, just go, ole, hey, right? So I was like, you know what? Let's just do this. They're going to come out strong. And the fly actually broke down her steps. She did a great job. Broke down her steps right before me. Kind of caught me off guard the first time. So I pulled right. And she fouled and everything. And that's fine. But we got awarded another quarter. And I say, you know what? Let's go left this time. And Rob and I actually joked after the game. He was like, yo, we never practice reverse hits on corners and seven up. And I was like, yeah, but you know what? Why not? Let's throw some little spice in there, right?
A little spicy salsa.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, the goalie played a great game, but we were just lucky enough to find the backboard and then celebrate afterwards.
So, okay. Looked like you had some words from for one of the girls from Michigan right before this entire sequence. What got you fired up?
Yeah, I mean, you're not the first person to ask me what I said, and I don't know if I can repeat what I said on this. But yeah, I mean, it was an emotional game. Both teams played a hard-fought game. We knew they were going to be physical.
That's pretty much what you said, right?
You're like,
you know what? You know what, ma'am? This has been a hard-fought game. I appreciate
Please
your effort.
Let me take this corner. Thank you. No. But yeah, it was good. I mean, she defended well the whole game, and yeah, there might have been a hard foul for the corner, but we just knew we had to capitalize on it. But yeah, words were shared. Can't repeat it. Goal is scored. Rest is history.
Yeah,
we're good.
Yeah, we're moving forward.
What I just heard Aaron say was, I can't wait to tell you when we turn the mics off. That'll be on the outtakes on the last show ever. So there's been some chatter since Sunday night. People starting to throw your name around in some big-time Tar Heel categories such as Mia Hamm, Michael Jordan, Lawrence Taylor, on sort of that Mount Rushmore of Carolina athletics. What does that feel like?
You know, it's an honor. I mean, it's an honor every day to walk out on that field with a penny, jersey, whatever it is, wearing Carolina. We represent the university, we represent the program, coach, everything. I'm just lucky to be able to be compared to those people. I mean, they're legends. They're amazing. They're the best at what they do. And, you know, if we keep working together, we'll be up there too. I mean, we've done it three times. We're looking to go more. So it'll be fun the next couple of years. But for me, it's motivation to keep working hard, put the time in. It obviously all pays off, so it's all worth it.
Do you even allow yourself to hear that kind of stuff or think about that kind of stuff? It's like, wow, you know what? I might be the best that's ever done this, at least to this point. Do you even let yourself think that way?
You know, I think it's all about the balance, being confident, not cocky, not complacent. It's all about being right in the middle. It's definitely rewarding to hear it, and I think, you know, it's been earned by all of us. We work hard every single day, and we come out there and we make each other better. I couldn't have done it without the teammates, coaches, my parents, everybody, teammates throughout the years. But you know, it's nice to hear it, but it's also not good to dwell on it, because it's all about what's next. So I'm excited.
We talked about this some when you were in here after the last championship.
Yeah.
You know how it goes.
Love that. Love it.
but it's even more true right now. There's so many good teams and student athletes on campus, and especially right now. What does that matter at all? Like, when you're chasing your own championship, do you think about, like, well, I want to make sure I get mine, because I know somebody's getting one.
Oh, 100%. It was the best. We had, I think, well, this past season, we had like four people on our pass list, and this weekend we got up to six, so woo. But it was amazing. Every team came out to support. I was just joking about it with some of the guys. We had, you know, the track and field team on this side. We had the wrestlers. We had the lacrosse guys. We had everybody there, the women's lacrosse people. It was amazing, and, you know, we were able to do it first this year, and I've said it to so many people already. You guys are next. Like, we're all on top this year. We all just got to finish work together, and everybody here knows the entire university is backing them, which is so supportive, so amazing to think of. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people ranked at number one or in the top five right now, and it'll be really exciting at the end of the year to see what happens.
All right, I told you this before the interview started, because your mom and dad are here. They're in Pod World headquarters listening to the interview in another room. So there was that moment right after the match. You guys celebrate, and then you go find your dad, and you have this big embrace. This is legitimate. We watched that in my house like 7 to 8 times. My wife is like bawling over there. What was that moment like for you to be able to go find your dad and share that moment?
It's amazing. Every single time we win, I look for my parents. I love them. I mean, with COVID and everything, it's been weird this seasons, I guess, two of them, for them to come down and balance everything. My brother's playing high school baseball. It's a senior year, so it's two big years on both ends. But yeah, I mean, everyone was like, no, you can't go in the stands. You can't see my parents. No, we're not in a bubble anymore. No. We just won a championship.
See what just happened on the field? I'm going to go see my parents.
I know. They're like, put your mask on. I was like, Aaron, like, come on. No. I'm going to hug my dad. So, yeah, I found him. I was lucky to get a big embrace by him. I found my mom. Mother's Day, what more can you expect from that? It was a great gift to her. I got her gifts to her before earlier in the day, but that was the big one we were holding on to. But yeah, it was fun.
And this is important to understand. Aaron's mom was there, of course, but Aaron's parents are very good fans. They found the spot to sit.
Right.
It just happens to be in separate portions.
Oh, yeah.
But look, it works. Like, there's we're not stopping that now.
No.
They have to stay there.
No, it's not stopping either.
Yeah.
I have actually, I think it's the newspaper, the Daily Tar Heel. I think it's from last year's, or no, it might have been.
One of those national.
All my championships are run together.
One of those. I can't keep them all straight, guys. I'm sorry.
I got all these rings. What are these all for?
That is not what I meant. But I do. I have the newspaper on my dashboard. And my dad jokes. He's like, that's got to stay there until you guys can't win it anymore.
Absolutely.
Like, I know. It's like yellowed, brown. Yeah. No, it's staying there. It is
so
staying there.
So did you guys almost fall down after you hugged?
Oh, yeah.
That would have been bad, Aaron.
I know. It would have been comical, but bad. Bad.
I was like, don't hurt Aaron. That's what I said out loud in my den last night when you guys almost fell down. It's like, don't hurt her.
The feet went through the chairs.
Put her in bubble wrap. Don't hurt her.
Well, I was yelling at the TV because I thought they were going to take the team picture while you were still in the stands.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
I was like, wait a minute. Aaron's not out there. Don't you take that picture.
I know. I get that from my dad, I think. He's always the last one to, you know, say goodbye at a party. He's always waiting. And talking to people, I'm like saying hello to everybody. Everyone's singing without me. I'm like, wait.
So you mentioned now looking forward. So I mean, I assume this is, this is obviously awesome, and this is what a great moment. But you don't feel like you're done yet. Is that a fair statement?
Oh no, no way. Yeah. We're gonna take these next couple of days, celebrate. Obviously, we put in a lot of work. We'll have a team meeting at the end, give all of our uniforms back because you know we took those home. but yeah, we'll have some fun together and watch film and debrief, obviously, because you can win from losses, but you can learn a lot, or you can learn from losses, but you can learn a lot from wins. And then in the fall, yeah, we'll turn it right back around and come out strong and everything. And I think coach is really exciting. Everyone's really excited, and we're just going to put a lot of work in again.
So you guys actually lost a game this year. That's what was that like?
Stop that.
Yeah, what was
track that statement. Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, it's terrible. I hate losing. You guys know that. That doesn't happen. No, but we learned a lot from it. We watched a lot of film. We debriefed. Honestly, in the end, it's for the better. We're not going to keep a 64 win streak, you know what
right.
I mean? But it was good. Everybody had a good attitude afterwards. Obviously, people handle it differently. I get pissed off, you know?
Yeah.
People forget about it, and everybody handles it their own way. But afterwards, everyone was still together, and we worked hard and watched film. We learned, and we just came out and said, you know, we're going to play Carolina hockey. That's how we win. That's what we do.
Okay, so this may have happened before this time period, but it is when I became aware of it. So that's really when it started,
right,
as far as I'm
concerned. That's when time began.
Yeah. So you did all the instructional videos kind of on social media, and I think this happened really started during COVID. Is that
yes.
correct? Okay. What gave you that idea? And it seemed like it got a whole lot of traction and a whole lot of responses. Was that fun?
Yeah, no, it was amazing. We got so much positive reinforcement from that. It was awesome. So many people reached out being like, this is awesome. You're helping so many girls. And I just love seeing some field hockey because no one was playing at that time. You know, everybody wants sports. But we were sitting around the living room one day, and my parents and I and my brother were talking. We're like, what can we do? Because everyone, you know, it was that miserable point in time where everyone's just sitting at home, not doing anything, looking for stuff to do. And I'm lucky enough to have that platform where I can reach out and, you know, help some people. And obviously it's stuff that I do every day. You see me before games, I still do my pulls and people make fun of me for it, but it works. but yeah, it was great. And I think a lot of people appreciated it, and we're just looking to grow the game, you know, field hockey, with everything that's happening right now, everybody just needs some positivity and support and everything. So,
sure.
Yeah, it was fun, and hopefully in the future I'll have another chance to do it, and we'll just keep on growing the game.
I don't have the confidence to make fun of Erin for her pregame routine.
No,
like,
no.
If I, whatever she did,
yeah,
that's what I'd be doing. I'd be right behind her like, Erin, what are we going to do now? We going to do some polls? Let's do it. I'm in. So you're kind of our local national championship correspondent.
Oh.
So you've now won a national championship in a normal year, school, everything's mm-hmm. normal. And now you've won one in a very weird year that hopefully we never do again.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
What was different about this year academically and athletically that either made it easier or tougher to focus on field hockey?
Yeah. Well, I guess bringing it way back to the start of quarantine and when everything was going down, we were all apart, which was really interesting because it was this huge time where everyone needs each other and needs to bond and have each other's backs. And we were all in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Holland, England, you know what I mean? So crazy. But we got together, coaches got us together over Zoom. We bonded, we did team activities, we talked about what this upcoming season is going to look like. And then coming into season, obviously academics are online. Everybody hates that, just so you know. I don't know if you've heard that already. Everybody is really excited to get rid of Zoom. But in the fall, it'll be a lot better and it'll be a breath of fresh air and everything. But I can't stress enough how much the team grew and had each other's backs. And I think we came a long way this season, and that's what makes it even more special, just because it was such an interesting year where things weren't normal for anyone. And no matter where you were, what you were doing, it was a year to adapt and learn. And I think we did that really well, and that's why we were able to come out on top.
Okay, a couple more things. Are we going to get another championship stick? Look, ours is it's right over there.
Yeah,
right,
you
over there.
Are.
Yeah, we need another stick.
It's out of date now.
Yeah, yeah, we need a new stick.
That's old.
Yeah, we need an up-to-date stick.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's number one. Number two, when you're at the bottom of the dog pile.
Oh, goodness.
How did you avoid injury? We were, again, in my house, my wife was like, they're going to hurt her at the bottom.
That's
how do you avoid injury?
Everyone says, like, don't do that. As much as you want a dog pile, do not do it. And I just remember I was on the bottom of the bottom. And then Rene Ricardo was on top of me. And we were facing each other. And I just remember us both yelling, get off! Everybody get off! And it was
it was nice that we won, guys.
Exactly,
but
exactly. And then we all came out. It was like, oh, thank goodness. And I see Hannah and Ava, and they're like holding their heads. They're like, ow. And I'm like, no, this is time to celebrate. Let's go. Oh, but it was so funny because everyone is like, oh, that's when people get hurt.
Yeah.
That's when you don't do that. And I'm sitting on the bottom claustrophobic, and I'm like, please get off me.
Yeah, no doubt.
We ask people this sometimes when they do something cool, because usually we don't.
Yeah, we need all the input.
When you do something like this, how many times have you watched it in the 20 or so hours since then?
Oh, so the hug with my dad, I've watched that the most. I've also, Dakota Moyer, he's moving, which we're so sad. Dakota, if you're listening to this, we're so mad at you for moving. But he takes amazing pictures, and he got like the whole game-winning score sequence of Mayer holding me and everything on pictures, and he like put it into this Instagram reel, and it was awesome. Watched that so many times. But yeah, I mean, you know, Twitter's popping, Instagram's popping. We love it. All the girls love it. We are all about the pictures. Any college girl is. So it's been really fun, and I think we'll keep looking at them for the next couple of days.
Assuming that you slept some last night, when you woke up this morning, how long did it take you before you remembered, oh man, I did something really cool yesterday?
It took me probably seconds until we all rushed into one of my roommates' room and, you know, debrief the night, have some laughs, look at the pictures, the videos, everything. But yeah, our team group chat was going crazy. Like, I can't believe we're national championships champions again. And not only this time for the freshmen, obviously they have so many fun years ahead of them, but this is our third time, and it's just something where you look at and you're just like, damn, like, that is cool. So we're so happy. I know everyone will definitely be celebrating a lot more today.
Big time flex, by the way, wearing the 2020 National Championship T-shirt today.
I had to
Big
throw time. It in the wash this morning. We're
Big
back.
Time flex. All right, let's get to what everybody wants to know about, Erin. When are you and I setting up our challenge?
I know. COVID got in the way, man.
I know. I'm ready. So if you haven't been with Aaron's relationship with the podcast for a long time, we set this up where I'm going to put on the pads.
Yep.
Now, I don't know what the original agreement was. I don't think it could be a penalty shot. That's way too close.
Oh, really?
What about from the other goal? That seems fair. That's really close in the penalty shot. But if that's what it has to be, that's what it has to be. But we're going to get this set up. We're going to air out the goalie equipment. I hear that's important.
Yeah, it's a little stinky.
Yeah, we got to air it out. And then are you going to be around?
Oh,
are you going home? What's the deal?
I'll go home in a couple days. We'll set it up. If not, you know the fall will be here.
Yes. Obviously. We've got to do this.
I've seen more field hockey than I had when y'all first had this discussion.
Yeah.
And I think I may have said you might stop one or two.
No.
Zero.
Yeah.
If she tries,
I'll give
you got no chance.
Maybe not. I'm kidding.
I'm going to do like that Michigan goalie did. No offense to the Michigan goalie. On the penalty shot where she just kind of fell down. It was just like kicking at it.
I love it.
Because it was like a change up, I think, by accident on the shot.
Yes.
So I'm going to
we had a good laugh about that.
Yes. What happened?
So
was it not? It just wasn't struck well?
No. Yeah. She just mishit it. And we practiced. My dad's like, make sure you're doing your strokes. I'm like, Dad, we do it all the time after practice. Coach is like, strokers, let's go. There's four of us that line up. We practice. We get at least two after, honestly, probably four out of five practices. And, you know, Bryn's awesome with how she fakes them out and everything in her body movement. But it was just an off one. And you know what? On the score sheet, all it says is a goal. So it doesn't matter.
It was a goal and what ended up being a one-goal win. That's right. That's all that matters. Well, Aaron, it's always awesome to see you. Thanks so much for coming and joining us. Congratulations again on all your success, on the team success, on the individual success. And I'm serious. Like, I saw so many people talking about Carolina field hockey last night. That's awesome. I mean, to have it on ESPNU on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock and you guys to be successful, awesome. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I'm so glad you're watching some field hockey.
Jones tweeted about today's guest a few days ago.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely amazing when Jones tweeted about Joseph Forte, how many former Carolina players chimed in right away to talk about how much they love watching him play.
That's because I love watching him play.
Oh, man.
So we had to go out and get Joseph Forte so that we could talk to him so that he could tell us why he's so awesome. So, Joseph, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me, and thank you for all the Carolina players that chimed in and said they liked they thought that watching me play was amazing. I love you guys, too.
What do you think it is about the way you played that connected? Jawad Williams was in there, Harrison Barnes in there. Of course, Carolina fans have such great memories. What was it about the way you played that connected so well?
I think that they was able to see that I had the will to win and that I also played with the fundamental, basic fundamentals of the game. So I always kept that in mind. So I think that combination really attached to people that watched me play, man. And I'm surprised in a crossover, 40-inch vertical world that my game would connect like that. But I'm so happy that it did.
Joseph, how are you doing? It's so great to talk to you, first of all, man. You have no reason to remember I was working on the Bill Guthridge TV show when you were a player here during your time in Chapel Hill. Always loved watching you play. How are you doing? How are things going?
Well, Coach Guthridge is a good friend of mine and a good mentor of mine. He always remains close to my heart. I'm doing great. Remember you lightly, but if you're Carolina, we're all family. I'm doing okay, man. You know, I've had a lot of ups and downs in my life. And, of course, Carolina was the ultimate high. And I also found the duality of the ultimate high, which was basically a measurement of how high I was with Carolina, to see that there's also another side so I could really appreciate what I had at Carolina.
For folks who either don't remember the Joseph Forte era at Carolina or haven't caught up on YouTube here lately, remind us how you came to Carolina. You played at DeMatha, which is another big-time basketball powerhouse.
Right. I played under Morgan Wooten. He's the all-time winningest high school coach, and he's out of Hinesville, Maryland. Morgan, basically, I was able to send an eighth-grade tape of me dunking at 13, and wow. I sent it to Coach Wooten, and Coach Wooten, he saw the tape, and he had me come up to one of his summer camps, and he had me watch the camp, and he told me, he said, listen, if you're half as good, this is at this point I was 70 on my way to 72-0 because I had won 36 games in eighth grade, 36-0 in eighth grade, and I went 36-0 in seventh grade. He told me if I was half as good as his other freshman, Keith Bogans, we'd be in good shape. Now at the time, I said, you know, Keith Bogans must be pretty good. But Coach Wooten was more than correct. I love him like a father. I love him right there with Bill Guthridge. And maybe I have a more of a family feeling to him because he met me at such a young age. And so from there, I went to Maryland, and I left Smyrna, Georgia, and I was able to put together a great 4 years at the Mather with Keith Bogans and Morgan Wooten, which led me right to the Carolina family.
Joseph, what was it about Carolina that was attractive to you when it was time for you to pick where you wanted to go to school?
I was, you know, me and Keith went to what we call the Aber-Schweizer games. It was in Mannheim, Germany. And Coach Guthridge came out there to see me play. This was like 15. When I saw that Coach Guthridge came all the way to Germany at 15 to see me play, I already knew there was something special. Because I said Coach Guthridge would not get on a plane to come see anybody play who was just a anybody. So from 15, when I was, I think, you know, teetering varsity, I was already, my confidence was very high because I said Coach Guthridge came to Mannheim, Germany to watch me play. So after that, that's when I knew I wanted to be a part of the Carolina family.
I always thought one of the coolest things about you was that you wore number 40. And it just looked cool with Forte on the back of the jersey and the number 40. When did you figure out how cool that would be?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because everybody talks about branding, you know, brand your name now. You know, it's so popular. But back then I was like, you know, your name is Forte. It would be so dope if you had 40. And they probably won't even figure it out. But Forte and 40, it goes hand in hand. So back then I had an eye for branding. And that's what it was all about, man. I'm glad you thought it was cool. It was intentionally done.
Justice, so if I'm not mistaken, your first official game for the Tar Heels was in the Maui Invitational. Is that right, when you were a freshman? Do you remember?
It was freshman year. I played against USC. I played against a player called David Blumenthal, who I ended up playing with in Israel. He played with Maccabi. He was a junior or a senior with USC, and we won our first game. I had 24 points in the Carolina Blue.
When did you realize that you were such a silky, smooth, offensive guy?
Well, you got to realize, when I tell you that I came from Morgan Wooten and I tell you how I came up there to Maryland with 36-0, when I came to the Mather, I was number two, if that. Morgan said if I was half as good as Keith Bogans, we'd be in good shape. He wasn't lying. Keith Bogans was the number one freshman in America. So at that time, I was always part two. I was always the side dish, but happily so, because Keith Bogans was number one. So when I came to Carolina, I had an opportunity where they're saying, look, man, you don't have to go get a regular meal. You can have a buffet. So I was already primed to basically maneuver and work the right way because I saw Keith Bogans and I had Morgan Wooten's guidance and I was ready to go.
I remember watching that Maui Invitational, and you got to remember, Carolina fans weren't used to freshmen coming in and scoring the way that you were scoring. Were you surprised at how easily your game translated to the college level and you could just immediately step in and do those types of things?
I'm going to be honest with you guys. Unfortunately, when I saw the Weber State situation, I knew that the expectations for Carolina, they were waiting for something major. And I knew that if I could take advantage of this moment and turn it around, it would be a prime. I would get more credit because of coming off of a down year than a regular good year at Carolina coming right off of that. And I wanted to show Carolina fans that I was diehard as far as making sure that the reputation of Carolina's basketball was going to be upheld immediately after the Weber State fiasco.
So that year, your freshman year, Joseph, you guys ended up, of course, as you know, going to the Final Four, and I want to talk about that in just a second. But one of the guys you played with in the backcourt was Ed Cota. And yeah. Adam and I talked to Ed a couple of years ago, had a great time interviewing him. What was it like being in the backcourt with Ed Cota, especially on the offensive right. end where you knew that he was going to get you the ball in a good position?
Well, Ed Cota was a godsend. I remember going to ABCD camp, and we were watching ESPN, and the whole thing was, is Ed Cota coming back to school? So once they said, ESPN said, Ed Cota's coming back to school, we all clapped. I celebrated. He was at ABCD camp. We was at ABCD camp. I was sitting on the bus. He walked past me, and I said, there's Ed Cota. So this is my first intake of Ed Cota. When I played with Ed Cota, I knew that I was playing with the best point guard that I would ever play with in my life. It was a blessing that he was still in school, and that anything that Ed Cota said was correct, and it hasn't changed since that day.
What about Bill Guthridge as a head coach? I think a lot of Carolina right. fans know him more as an assistant coach. What was it mm-hmm. like playing for him? What were his strengths as a coach?
Well, the first thing you got to be very cognizant of is that the Bill Guthridge went to 3 Final Fours in 4 years. So you got to throw that out there. And then you have to understand that Coach Guthridge was basically, he was more like a you should know already kind of coach. He's not going to get in your face and yell and scream. You guys know the Carolina way. You know I'm Coach Guthridge. You know what Carolina's about. Let's just do it. Do I have to say it? For me, he had all kinds of confidence in me and Ed Cota, and we loved him for his coaching mentality. I wasn't a big yeller guy. I wasn't a guy that liked coaches yelling at me. So when I had Coach Guthridge, he was basically he was also a continuation of Morgan Wooten. I enjoyed this level of older gentlemen in the way that they coach. It doesn't mean that they can't get stern. It doesn't mean that Coach Guthridge doesn't know how to lay down the law, but he has a way to say that, hey, man, you know to do the right thing, just go ahead and do it.
Joe, y'all, that your freshman year, a bit of an up-and-down year for the team, but then you had such a remarkable run in the NCAA tournament. I remember those wins over Stanford and Tennessee in particular on the way to that Final Four. What do you remember about that run through the tournament your rookie year?
I remember that, like you said, the year was basically an 18-13 year. It was a subpar, mildly disappointing year as far as the regular season. I thought that we could make it up in the Final Four or in the tournament if we just go ahead and win when it counts the most. What we did in the regular season will be overlooked, and I hope that we could have an opportunity kind of to let Coach Guthridge show how much of a good coach, good person, and just great overall individual he was by giving him a Final Four. His mother had passed before the Stanford game. This was a really important game for us. Because at this time, after his mother passed before the game, I thought, what a better way than to win that game and go on to the Final Four for Coach Guthridge.
I remember hearing Steve Kirshner, who has worked with Carolina in sports information for a long time and worked with men's basketball for the vast majority of that time, saying he felt like the locker room after the win to go to the Final Four that season was one of the most emotional locker rooms he's ever seen, because so many of the players wanted to do it for Coach Guthridge.
For Coach Guthridge. And that's the thing. When you have a higher purpose to do something, certain powers and certain forces work with you. And you look back over time and you look on paper and you say, it still doesn't make logical sense. But it goes to show you how great Coach Guthridge was as a person, that we was able to put that run together. Because everybody, Brendan Haywood, especially in the Florida game, he really tried to bear the load and also get Coach Guthridge another win. We came up short, but we love Coach Guthridge, and we love Coach Smith, and we love Carolina, and we displayed our love. It wasn't just something that we said. It wasn't something. It's not just talk. We showed it, and for the fact that you guys 20 years later are recognizing it, it shows that Carolina family cannot be beaten.
Well, now, but we got to say, because Ed Cota made sure we understood, the only reason Brendan Haywood had to carry some of that load in the Final Four was Ed Cota got called for some very questionable foul calls. And he still remembers it 20 years later.
We know that they was getting a little carried away. They could not understand how we kept winning. And I'm not going to sit here. No, I'm serious. And I watched the tape. I watched the game on YouTube. And I had the same reasonable questions. And I'm not going to go as far as Ed Koda, because Ed Koda, once he goes, he goes. He's number one. But for sure, I watched the game again, and I saw some questionable fouls on Ed Koda as well. But we were just happy that we got to the Final Four. We know that, wink, wink, we could have got to the championship at least. But we're going to leave it where it is. We're not going to question it, and it is what it is.
So, Joseph, then, of course, there was the coaching change at Carolina. How challenging was that for you and for the entire team, with just a whole a brand-new style and a brand-new regime coming right in with that change?
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, after Morgan Wallen and Bill Guthridge, I pretty much was spoiled. That was my coaching temperature. If you were 50, 55 and up, and you know, I would love you as a coach. This was an opportunity for Coach Daugherty to kind of show me that, Joe, every day is not going to be your day. Every coach is not going to be your coach. You're going to have to deal with somebody that's going to be totally the opposite of what you dealt with. Coach Daugherty came into a situation where he was forced into basically the legacy of Carolina. And we never look at it from his individual perspective and all the transitions that he had to make. And what a pressure job that he had. And I think Matt Daugherty deserves more credit, because he went on the 18-game win streak. He got Coach of the Year that year, and I took Player of the Year. And supposedly, we didn't like each other, or we had some issues. And I think that that's an awesome, at the end of the day, resume, you know, of stats, considering the truth that we had to deal with during that year.
One of those wins, Joe, during that long win streak that season, was that very memorable victory at Cameron Indoor Stadium against what was a really good Duke team that year. In fact, they went on, if I'm not mistaken, to win the national title that year. What do you remember, if anything, about that particular game?
That particular game, I know that Jason Capel, he came to play that game. I don't know what happened in the Duke house with his brother, Jeff Capel, and you know, because Jeff went there. I don't know if Jeff didn't pass the Fruit Loops or pass the milk. But Jason came to play. That Duke-North Carolina rivalry was strong in that house, because I remember watching Jason. And I said, I've never seen him play like this since Prospect Hall. And I said, let's ride Jason Capel. Let's see how far he's going to go, and let's just assist him. Let's be number two. Let's be like I was at the Mather with Keith Bogans, and I was going to play off Jason Capel. And it worked to the T, man. It worked to the T.
Now, Joseph, you said it, that supposedly you and Matt Daugherty didn't like each other, and that's been sort of the third-party story for 20 years now. So what exactly was that relationship, both as you saw it back then in 2001 and then as you think about it now in 2021?
Well, in 2001, you got to realize, after 4 years from 97 to 2001, I'm basically, in my mind, as an 18-year-old, 20-year-old, basketball, I'm God to myself as far as thinking that nothing I do is wrong. So when Coach Daugherty tells me that my shoes are untied, I'm going to tell him, maybe you need to look down again, you know, because, you know my ego is probably out the roof. So in 2001, yeah, you know, I'm probably looking at Matt Daugherty like, maybe we need to get a new coach. In 2021, I say, hey, wait a minute, Joe. You both had to go through transitions. There's no need to keep on throwing the same salt on the chicken. We already heard that story. We understand that story. Let's talk about the things that he had to overcome. Let's talk about his perseverance and how he kept going. He went to SMU. He went to Indiana Pacers. He kept fighting, even though he took a job that would basically mark his career and his life for what he did or did not do in that particular year. And he kept fighting like a true champion. And that's the Carolina way. And I love Matt Daugherty from the bottom of my heart for surviving. And that's the only part that I focus on at this point.
Joseph, is it okay if I steal the phrase, stop throwing salt on the chicken? Is it okay if I start
stop
using
it? Can
I use that?
You can have that. You know what I'm saying? You can have that. You know, have some chicken with your salt. You know what I mean?
Now, I'm going to tell you another way that I knew Joseph Forte was one of the coolest guys around. He's probably the guy I associate with wearing the Jordan 11s, the Concords, when he played for the Tar Heels. Now, that has become like the all-time Jordan shoe. Is that because Joseph Forte wore it in college? You basically made that shoe.
It's because Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan, and Joe is a Michael Jordan fan. And Joe grew up loving Michael Jordan. And just to be a part of any Jordan legacy, one has to be humble enough to separate himself and say, come fly with me and sit down and remember those times when Michael Jordan was more than an influence. He was a father figure for a lot of us guys who didn't have daddies at home. So for me to even get that close to Michael Jordan and to be referenced to him is the ultimate, basically, it improves my life, man. You know what I'm saying? Because I know what Mike meant to me before I got to Carolina. So I'm just happy to be associated with Michael Jordan on a positive level.
Joseph, I have seen some interviews with you from previous years when you were talking about your NBA experience and just saying that it was a lot very early in your life. How would you, looking back on it now as and this is hard for me to say, Joseph Forte is almost 40 years old or right at 40.
Man.
Looking back on it now, how would you do things differently, if you would, from your time in the NBA?
I would have stayed in college. It's just that simple. I came out early because I was too immature to deal with the change of not having Morgan and Bill Guthridge coaching style. So I left too early. If I would have stayed 3-4 years, it would have been totally different. Once I came out early, I realized that those guys, Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker, were on a whole nother level. I was out my league. And I had to do the best I could because I couldn't come out and say, hey, guys, I came out too early. You know what I mean? I need to be in school. I had to go with the flow. So that would be the biggest number one change. And then that would basically be a domino effect to everything else that happened to me. And everything that happened to me, I'm fine with it. I was not fine with it at the time. I was very bitter. I was very vengeful. I was depressed. I went through mental challenges and still even battling mental challenges as far as understanding how could I have so much and do so little with so many great names associated with me. So I don't want you to think that it was just something that I slid under the rug. It took me time to get over, and now I'm past it.
You mentioned some of the guys you played with on the Celtics being on another level basketball-wise. What was it like to be just kind of in a locker room and living with those guys off the court from that maturity aspect, not the basketball part?
And that was the thing. Like, I wasn't – when I was in the NBA, I wasn't there as an NBA player. I was there as, like, a fan. Like, I was there – like, I saw Paul Pierce every day. And I remember our first practice, he's like, look, I make $90 million, you know what I mean? And basically he was telling me, like, any dollar you make, it doesn't mean anything here. I'm Paul Pierce. I'm what you were in North Carolina times two. And there's nothing you can do about it. And there's Antoine Walker. And he's telling me basically, look, this game that you play in Carolina, it has no room here. So I had to fall back and be a fan and just enjoy the company. And I became like a little brother to Antoine Walker. And I became kind of like Paul Pierce, like a knowing little brother. You know what I mean? And I enjoyed every minute and every hour of every day I spent in the NBA under that guidance, even with my college pedigree.
Joseph, you played in a whole bunch of places overseas as well. What was that experience like? It seems like some guys really enjoy that, and some guys struggle with that. Did you enjoy it or no?
It's a catchy situation. From a basketball standpoint, it was like me basically continuing my college career as far as the competition, but the court was smaller because overseas, they emphasize the college game as far as fundamentals and thinking and stuff like that. But as far as the off-the-court issues, payment, the treatment, that kind of stuff gets a little questionable. But for me, overall, I'm going to say that my overseas experience was better than most. I love my overseas experience. I treasure Siena and I treasure Maccabi Tel Aviv. Those two teams, Siena out of Italy and Maccabi Tel Aviv out of Israel, those were the two teams that I played for that I appreciated the most. And I was just a practice player with Israel. But with Makai, with Sienna, I won the championship in 2006-2007.
Joseph, we have not seen you back at Carolina a ton. Of course, you've been playing some, and as you said, you've had some personal journey that you're going on. Do you think we may see you back in Chapel Hill soon?
Yeah, I got to get down there. I miss the love. I miss. I didn't want to present myself until I had all the right understandings of what happened to me, because these questions that you had, if you would have asked me maybe 3-4 years ago, I may not have been given the right answers that I would want to give right now. So now I feel that now I can present myself, represent myself to the guys and say, look, I am sincerely part of the Carolina family. I had some emotions that I had to go through and some understandings or misunderstandings of what I perceived happened to me. And so therefore, I'm going to be down there. I got to make my way down there soon. My good friend Swati, my mentor here in New York, he's always urging me to reconnect with Hoots. I heard Pat Sullivan's down there. I got to get down there, guys.
Well, and you know we'd love to have you, because the good thing about the Carolina family is they don't care if you do dumb stuff. They still love you because you're a Tarian.
Hey, that's, you know what? And it's funny. I didn't know that, man, because, you know, everything as a basketball player, when you're a basketball player, is conditioned upon your last game, your last off-the-court incident. So for me to kind of get the unconditional love, man, it really is what Coach Guthridge, you know, had me sign up for when he said Carolina family when I was 18, man. So I'm happy that I chose wisely to go to Carolina at 18. It's like an inheritance. How you doing, Helen? It's an inheritance, and that I can activate it by just being a good person and reacclimating myself to being a good individual. And that's what I could never know that I did when I was 18, man. I'm so happy that I went to Carolina Chapel Hill.
Everybody comes to this perspective at a different time in their life and through different ways. How have you come to this much more mature perspective, as you said, in these last 3 or 4 years? How have you figured it out?
Brutal. It's been brutal. I took a good butt beating. I got a good whooping. A good life beat me down. And it said, if you're so good, if you're so better than Michael Jordan, how come you're not playing right here? How come you don't have money right here? How come you're homeless? How come you're going through this? How come you're going through that? I've battled so many different things that I've said, you know what? At some point, Joe, you got to stop pointing the finger and maybe look at the man in the mirror. Maybe look at the man in the mirror. And when I say these things, nothing that I've ever had to go through has been harsh because of Carolina. Everybody has always given me a pass because they say, oh, Joe, that's Joe from North Carolina. Oh, that's Joe from North Carolina. How can I sit here now and tell you that North Carolina hasn't played a role in saving my life? Everything I went through, no matter how hard it was, everybody gives me a pass and say, no, he's not going to be out there like that because he went to North Carolina. We're not going to let him not get a job. We're not going to not pay him because he went to North Carolina. They don't care what my status is at North Carolina or not. Now, how can I sit here and have an honest conversation with you and not tell you those things?
Well, man, we really appreciate you doing that today. We appreciate you giving us some time. And I know I speak for Tar Heels everywhere. We got to get you here, Joseph. We want to see you. We want to see you in Chapel Hill.
I'm going to be there.
Can't get through from there. Bounce pass to Lang. Lang gets it off to Cota. Shot clock is down to 5. Cota with a reverse dribble in the lane. Out to Forte. A long 3. Good! Oh, it just beat the shot clock. Forte with a 3 from the top of the foul circle, and it's 50-47 Carolina.
Great stuff from both Aaron Mattson and Joseph Forte, and our interviews on the show brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for right around 5 seconds. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field, but doing it with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel, so put down that phone while you're driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more, visit trustedchoice.com and find an agent near you. Adam, I think it's if you're not in our age range, the best age range, it's easy to forget how good Joseph Forte was. Joseph Forte, number in the rafters, ACC Player of the Year, said it himself. He feels like he left too early in hindsight. had he stayed in a time period where, you know, staying 3 or 4 years was not unheard of for a great player. In fact, it still happened more often than not. I think he could have set all kinds of Carolina records, at least offensively, because he was such a gifted offensive player and scorer of the basketball.
And the league was good.
Oh, gosh, he shared that player of the year with Shane Battier.
Right. We've talked about this a little bit, I think, off air. I feel like if he had stayed 4 years and then everything else had stayed the same, he'd be our Larry Miller. Mm. He's the guy who, if you saw him, you know. But if you didn't see him, you just haven't heard that much about him. He didn't win a national championship, so maybe you're not as familiar with the games. And he's kind of reached that time where he's far enough in the past that you hear old fogies say, oh, this Joseph Forte had an unbelievable mid-range game. And you're like, okay, Larry Miller was a great left-handed shooter. But to have him...
The L&M boys, we get it.
To have him step back into the Carolina circle would be great. And I think it's always been a challenge with him because he was in like the one brief moment in Carolina basketball history where there's some upheaval and some coming
tumultuous. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that just adds kind of another element to his story, which it, as you just heard, he recognizes and knows that is how it was then. That's not how it is now.
Yeah. That time period, the Haywood, Lang, Capel, Forte, that time period, I do think gets lost a little bit because there wasn't that stability of Dean Smith or Roy Williams. It was just in that time where, and that's not to discredit Bill Guthridge or Matt Doherty. It was just, that's very unusual for Carolina basketball to, I mean, think you had two coaches in 6 years. And on the other side of that, you had two coaches over the span of like 60 years. So it was just an unusual time.
Right before social media. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you saw his highlights on Twitter or something. Like either you saw it basically in person or you just aren't quite as familiar. And we were lucky enough to see it in person. So we know Joseph Forte could play then and he could play right now.
Yeah. I wish, and we talked about it some, that Maui Invitational where he showed up and was awesome from the jump. And you were like, as a Tar Heel fan, you were like, whoa, what is this? This freshman, and they're giving the ball to him, and he's scoring all the time. That was, and you said it during the interview. I mean, that was an unusual thing still at that time.
At that time, if you were a freshman, maybe you'd come off the bench and score like 8 points. And you'd be, and I'd be super excited about you.
God, this Okalijah's got a roll.
Wait until he's a senior. He's going to light this place up. It wasn't like Cole Anthony going out and dominating in his first game. You never saw that, ever. And I vividly remember just sitting at my house like, what is this guy? He can do whatever he wants. And it's his first game. It was like seeing Haley's Comet.
I was also impressed with Joseph Forte's recollection of like people who were guarding him, and I was impressed by that.
I don't remember all those details. I just remember he was awesome.
So anyway, we really appreciate Joseph Forte giving us the time. And as we said, there are definitely some topics we'd like to continue our discussion with Joseph Forte, which we hope to do in the future. Show brought to you by UNC Health. A reminder that UNC Health is dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. Their lineup is unchealthcare.org/sports. unchealthcare.org/sports. You look like you had something to say, Adam. Do you not?
No. You know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about The Last Dance when they show Michael Jordan that Isaiah Thomas footage.
Yeah.
Of him, wasn't it Isaiah Thomas?
No, there was the one where Gary Payton was, and he
like
was,
he had some trouble with the glove.
Yeah, and like Michael Jordan gave it like the hoo-hoo-hoo while he was watching it. Yeah.
Aaron Mattson was Michael Jordan, and number 7 on Michigan was Gary Payton.
Yeah. Adam, you don't have a list today.
Nah.
Okay.
Look, when we're already talking to Aaron Mattson and Joseph Forte,
yeah,
I don't need a list.
Okay, we do have a story time today that we want to get to Also, just want to check on a couple of things. Adam, everybody thinks it's hilarious that I'm a fall risk. It's hilarious.
Okay, well, I too thought that was funny until something happened to me.
Oh. You tried to get on an elevator? Or an escalator?
It was an escalator.
Excuse me, an escalator.
And it was in the Pacific time zone. Those are tricky. Okay.
Yeah, so, look, if you're in a different time zone, you know.
All bets are off.
Did it really happen? Yeah. Adam falling down and turtling on his back, the base of
like
an
escalator. Like the Michigan goalie trying to stop a penalty shot.
The base of an escalator with people stepping over him, looking at him in shame. Maybe. Maybe not.
Were those people who were ashamed his family? Yes. So, you know how we've talked about how sometimes when you suggest things around your phone, becomes reality?
Yes.
I think the fact that my phone heard you talking about being a fall risk made something terrible happen.
Okay.
So I was sitting at the home office this weekend.
Right.
I was doing some work.
You were just grinding through the weekend like you normally
do. Yeah. I was like, let me get my list ready for Tuesday's pod.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there and I had, like, I was sitting kind of weird because I wasn't going to be sitting there for a super long amount of time. So I was sitting weird. Well, then the phone rang. Okay, I'm going to answer that phone. So I have this thing where I can't sit down when I'm talking on the phone. I walk around when I'm on the phone.
Okay.
I don't know why. It doesn't make sense. So I went to, as I have done a million times before, stand up and walk around while I was on the phone.
Yeah.
The next thing that happened was I fell down because my foot had gone to sleep.
Ooh.
Not a little bit of sleep, but like it's not there anymore.
Right.
Like I may not have a foot anymore.
You're unclear if it's still there.
So when I stood up, left foot, check.
Good old,
all systems go.
Good old left foot. Now always can count on him.
And then I went to like swing my right foot over next to it where it belongs, and there was no contact with the ground. There was no feeling. And I was like, well, I don't think this seems right. I don't think I'm a pirate who has a peg leg. I'm not really sure what's occurring. So I, and all this time, I'm like, hello? And then, but then I'm like, because I don't know what's happening. Well, so the right foot never did come online. So I just went down. I went down in a heap. And so it didn't feel good.
Did you press your button and help came?
Well, the person on the phone was like, what's that? What's that? I think we have a bad connection. And I was like, I think we do. Let me call you back. Because at that point, I was just sitting on the ground, and I was trying to pick up my right foot and bang it against the ground to make it work again. And that didn't work because, I mean, it was asleep. Like, it had taken Benadryl, and it was asleep. So that person hung up, luckily, and I was supposed to call them back, and I didn't. But in better news, my right foot is working again. So I'm wondering if the next time I go to the eye doctor, do I need to tell them that I'm a fall risk? Because now I am.
Bernice and Joy, who helped you get to the Grand Canyon?
Hey, Bernice and Joy, tell everyone which power wheelchair got you to the Grand Canyon.
Hop around. Now I'm free to see the world.
I've never had a appendage go that much to sleep in my entire life.
There's nothing worse than waking up at like 3:30 in the morning and you're trying to move your arm and you're like, what is my right arm there? And it's like you swing. By the way, everybody got upset that we were yelling at Miles for the Apple podcast. Look, we didn't actually think that Miles could fix the Apple podcast app. Look, Apple, you're on the hot seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've already started. We had to post the Spotify link on Friday.
I can't remember if it was on here that I said it. I've switched over to Spotify for my podcast listening.
We just want you to listen to the podcast however is best for you. But look, Apple, we need you to help us out. When we post it, it needs to be there.
And subscribe and rate.
Subscribe and rate.
100 stars. And then subscribe again, rate again.
Yeah. Just keep rating and leaving reviews.
Well, and you know what this goes back to, which a couple of listeners astutely pointed out. Why would you update your phone if it's already working?
The phone update seems to be what what is messing with the Apple Podcast app.
That's why you don't update your phone. Because if I have a phone that already performs all the functions I want, I don't want your buggy updates.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of phones, I had totally forgotten that in the DC Glenn interview, he talked about how they had a tag team phone.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he doesn't answer that tag
team. Yeah, Kate Leslie said she would go work for the bubble and answer the tag team phone. I'd totally forgotten that the tag team phone existed.
There were quite a few things I had forgotten in that tag team interview.
The picture of the golf shot on eBay, I don't understand what's happening there. It's up to $5.50. Guys, it's just a pic. We didn't put it up there. Like, this is not our doing.
$5.50. It's gotten 7 bids and 3 bidders as of now. The auction ends on Wednesday, May 12th at 4:33 p.m.
Yeah.
Want to be clear, there seems to have been some back and forth about where the proceeds of this auction are going. We don't know.
Yeah.
We're not getting them. It's not like Jones's cameo,
right,
where they just send him a bathtub full of money.
Yeah. I've done a few cameos. In fact, I've got one to do later today.
Oh, you've already got it on the agenda?
Yeah.
Oh, do
yeah.
Cameo.
Cameo time. Knocked out a couple, including one from a big pod fan.
Hmm. Anything unusual that you've had
to
do?
Well, no, but part of the one I did was they were talking about they're getting married next year, and I said that I fully expected us to get an invitation. But if they just wanted to send one, that you could be my plus one.
I feel like I should get a cut of that cameo. Anytime I'm mentioned, I should get a percentage.
No, sorry, that's not how cameo works.
Can the pod do cameo?
Probably.
I don't know how. Miles?
Cameo.com/Jones Angel. Go right there.
That doesn't you sound can probably, like the pod address.
Yeah, and then if you want Adam in there too, you can specifically request it. And good news, all the proceeds go directly to the Jones Foundation.
Miles, we need a pod cameo.
Yeah, get on it, Miles.
Miles, we'll give you your usual cut from what we usually give you from all the good work you do.
Adam, how about a story time to close us out today?
This episode has had it all.
Yeah, so we were going to run this the other day on Friday's show, but it just got to be such a full show that we didn't do it. So we held on to it, and it was actually two story times were sent in one, and it is by Oliver. Now, the first one, they're both golf-related. The first one is almost all golf. So only big golf heads like me would understand them. So we're not going to read that one. We're going to read the second one. But speaking of golf, Adam, the show brought to you in part by Pinehurst. And there's more to the Pinehurst Resort than Donald Ross's masterpiece, Pinehurst No. 2. There's the stunning redesign of Pinehurst No. 4. There's the cradle. There's the North and South Bar with its array of bourbons, whiskeys, and scotches, the wonderful Pinehurst Brewing Company, craft beers, classic North Carolina barbecue. Never in the history of time has there been more to discover at the cradle of American golf than at this moment right now. Go to Pinehurst.com, plan your visit.
I really didn't understand the first story. I was just reading back through it. Like, I think it's because I'm not a big golf head.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a poor description. It's just that I don't know the rules.
Right. Yeah, you've never played Wolf before.
Correct.
Yeah. Sorry.
You know what happens to the boy who cries wolf.
Okay, Adam. Hey, thanks, Dad. Well, why don't you go stamp out your foot a little bit, see if you can get feeling back in it. While you do that, why don't I read this story time? It was from our friend Oliver. And Oliver's story starts like this. Oliver says this story was about the day he played the best round of golf in his life and disgusted Mia Hamm in the process. One of my regular golf playing partners and friends was/is, which one is it? connected to the Carolina women's soccer program.
Anton Dorns.
And he invited, still is. And he invited me at the last minute to help fill out two weekend foursomes that were going to be playing at a very nice course in the Cary/Raleigh area. The group of eight ended up being just seven, and Oliver was placed in the group of three, a group that was made up of Oliver, Mia freaking Ham in all caps, and one of Mia's college friends. A very comfortable threesome for Oliver, I'm sure. Needless to say, Oliver was nervous and was very obviously the third wheel of the group. But Mia and Friend were both very friendly, and he was having a great time, especially once it became clear that he was having the round of his life.
What do you do in that situation? Like, you're the third person, and you don't know these other two people. With Mia Hamm, are you like, so what do you do? Or do you acknowledge, like, you are Mia Hamm?
Now, I'm going to guess that Oliver was in the cart by himself. So I think you can really have to just deal with the small talk on the tee and on the green, but mostly just on the tee. Because then the rest of the time, you're just off to get your golf ball. So I'm guessing, yeah, this is a tough situation, though.
Well, can you be like, well, I host a podcast. What do you do?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Soccer.
You know, they call that football overseas. Heather O'Reilly told us that once on, I don't know if you've ever heard of Heather. She's a very good soccer player in Carolina.
They're so much better at soccer overseas than we are here stateside.
Oliver says his ball striking was just okay, but he was hitting what felt like every putt. Which, by the way, when you started asking me that question, I thought you meant, what do you do when you're having the round of your life? And I was going to respond, you start thinking about it too much and immediately blow up and ruin it. Right. That's what I would do. That's why you got to hit your best shots on 18. A ridiculous string of luck that had Oliver within striking distance of his personal best. With just a few holes to go, the inevitable collapse came with a disastrous 11 with two exclamation points in parentheses on a par 5. Dejected, I told Mia, who was keeping score for the group, to put me down for an 8. The reason being is that I had recently started tracking my handicap and had been told that I wasn't supposed to record higher than a triple bogey for record-keeping purposes. Of course, Oliver knew that he had shot an 11, but he was trying to be faithful to the handicap process. Well, Mia Hamm did not see it that way. Clearly skeptical, Mia gave Oliver a look of poorly disguised scorn that I still remember with perfect clarity to this day. They had seen me hacking it up on the hole, and she very obviously thought I was trying to cheat. There was a dramatic pause, a raised eyebrow, and finally, a reluctant 8 written on the scorecard by a clearly disgusted Mia Hamm. Coming from an all-time athletic icon, the misunderstanding felt even worse. I tried to explain, but she clearly wasn't having any of it. She very clearly thought I was trying to fudge the numbers or give myself credit for something I had not earned. Even with the miserable 11 on the par 5, Oliver ended up shooting an 84. No big deal. A score that was then and remains now the best round of Oliver's life. But the whole experience was tainted by the fact that one of the world's greatest athletes thought I was a pathetic golf cheater. Like a lot of golf stories, neither one of the two stories that he told us had a happy ending, but they both have that so close to gory glory thing, kind of like 2 inches from winning a new car. That makes them both personally memorable and really fun to tell people about. He says, P.S. for anyone wondering, Mia beat me, of course. She shot an 81 because she's Mia Hamm.
Well, so here's my question. So was his 84 with the 11 or with an 8?
He said, I ended up shooting an 84. Even with my miserable 11 on the par 5, I still ended up shooting an 84.
So if he,
that means he was 6 over the rest of the round. That's pretty good.
And that means if she had given him the 8, which he clearly so rightfully earned, he's at 81, same as Mia Hamm.
Yeah.
You tied with Mia Hamm on the athletic playing field.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I don't really understand the whole handicap situation. It's better to be low, right?
Right, yeah. So it is suggest, like, if you were a 3, that would mean that your average is that you shoot 3 shots over par on an average round.
That's pretty good.
Right, that'd be very good. So I'm, like, I'm much higher. I'm in between, like, I'm like an 18.
And so,
or a little, but I mean, let's, after that shot, maybe a 15.
But so it's not like an actual handicap that's placed on you at the beginning of the round.
No, but like, for example, in the Carolina Kids Classic, I was listed as an 18. So every score that I scored on a hole, I got to take a shot off of it because that was my handicap. So like if I made a birdie, our team could count it as an eagle by me because, does that make sense?
Well, why wouldn't I just tell everybody I'm like a 36?
Because it's a gentleman's game, Adam. Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. We will have a podcast later this week on Friday. No video pod scheduled this week, but we will have an audio pod on Friday. Looking forward to that. And off we go. Into the future. Let me tell you something. Our booking department has been working hard. We've got a bunch of interviews built up. Good ones. All over the place, too. It's off-season pod time, so who knows who's coming. From all walks of life, we have interviews.
Could be.
We just ran DC Glenn from Tag Team.
Could be related to sports. Could not be. Could be related to the Tar Heels. Could not be.
Yeah. We just got all kinds of crazy stuff coming up. So, hope you enjoy all of that. And we'll see you again on Friday. But for now, we're going to let Aaron Mattson and Joseph Forte in the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Aaron Mattson, and see you later, Big Grits.
All right, this is Joseph Forte. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network, brought to you by Crumley Roberts. Visit CrumleyRoberts.com today to find out how they can stand up for you.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.